percentage grew from 26 contracted licenses to more than 400,000. Then our requirement for a solution for the division FSL, the ACPS required a solution to equip all FSL stores with the biometric and barcode solution, which expanded the scope of EMS, the exhibit management system, to a point where the projected value of licenses was becoming prohibitive. For division visible policing, our requirement was a solution to manage exhibits, that is the SAP setting store, from the time the exhibit enters the SAPS until the time that it is disposed of. So with regards to PCAM, we had a requirement for a turnkey solution to manage exhibits, which is the system that was designed to function at all SAPS components, to automate the inefficient and cumbersome manual processes to manage property items and exhibits. So a decision was made to acquire a fully automated system, which is the PCAM system. Now, just to give the committee an understanding of developments in terms of the milestones and timelines, a request for bid was published by CETA for the provision of this solution, which is PCAM solution, for a period of 3 years with an option to renew. And then the bids were advertised and they were closed 27th of June 2008. 30th of June, the bid evaluation committee, and that evaluation committee consisted of members from the SAPS as well as members from CETA, and they started with the evaluation. You will recall that this specific matter was questioned previously when it was asked, was PCAM a SAPS project or CETA project? So our bid evaluation committee consisted of members from both the SAPS and CETA. Then in September 2008, that committee submitted their report to the recommendation committee of CETA as per the procedure. And then that CETA recommendation committee approved the report of the bid evaluation committee on the 21st of October in 2008. December 12, 2008, the SAPS, we received a letter from CETA where they indicated the approval of the BEC recommendation, and that's when they recommended the award be to the company Unisys Africa Pty Ltd. Then on the 2nd of Feb 2009, the police approved the recommendation by CETA, and we awarded this contract to Unisys. And a letter of acceptance of this bid from Unisys was received on the 5th of May. 5 February 2009. 13 February 2009, then the contract negotiations started between the SAPS as well as the company Unisys. And then the result is that we managed to bring down the bidding price of 262.3 million to the agreed price of 183.5 million. Part of the proposal included the replacement of the exhibit management system, the IMS, as we usually call it, the replacement of IMS with PCAM version 1.1 at FSL to track and trace property items and exhibits within the chain of custody life cycle. PCAM version 1.1 is developed on an advanced platform, and it includes an enterprise license agreement and added functionality as compared to the EMS. the IMSS. In October 2010, an agreement for the establishment, maintenance and support of a PCAM solution within SAPS between UNICEF and SAPS was signed for a period of 3 years. This contract was signed by the Chief Operations Officer, Lieutenant General Mgwenya, for the SAPS. Then, on the 23rd of December 2010, we issued an order for the statement of works 1 and 2. 3rd January 2011, the project started. And then in March 2011 and 12th April 2012, that's when we issued orders for statement of works 3 and 4. This contract will expire in December 2014. The main functions of PCAM, if you look at the project scope, is to take possession of property items or exhibits, registration thereof, safeguarding of the property, investigation, as well as the disposal of the property or exhibits. Now, the proposal of UNICEF was as follows. In terms of statement of works number one, the proposal was a project management office. Statement of works number two, the proposal was number one, the PCAM version 1.1 enterprise software. And this version 1.1 was the commercial off-the-shelf product. And then secondly, in terms of statement of works two, is the annual maintenance. And the third proposal was functional and technical support. With regards to statement of work 3, the proposal is the PCAM generic and firearm requirements confirmation and functional design. Statement of work number 4 is the PCAM version 1 plus version 1.x generic and firearm delivery, which is the technical design, build, test and implement at one pilot site, and that site is in Cullinan. The statement of works 5 is the functional design. Later we will request General and Brigadier Ngake to explain in terms of statement of works 5. Now looking at the cost statement of works 1, we have issued an order to the value of 27.1 million as indicated there. And so far UNICEF has invoiced us to the amount of 12.5 million. And then this table just indicates what the 27 includes. On statement of works number 2, the same, we have issued orders to the value of 67 million. UNICEF have invoiced 50.9, and that is the breakdown of the 67 million. Statement of works number 3, orders issued 12.5 million, invoice 13 million. And then the same is for statement of works number 4. We have issued orders 62.3 million, however, we have not been invoiced so far. Okay, and then this slide indicates the technology expansion in terms of iteration, as well as on the right-hand side is the description. My colleagues will elaborate on that later as we go on. On the statement of works 5, the order not issued, it is for the ITC for lab work configuration at FSL Scientific Analysis Unit. And this one is still in process. So we have already indicated that the total cost for this project is 183.5 million. So this cost includes the statement of works 1 to 5 over that period of 3 years, which includes the development of PCAM version 1X, and the implementation at one site only, as I've indicated, and these costs do not include any PCAM hardware, and the hardware is procured separately from Schedule C.
No, let me interrupt you. So you order the hardware by Schedule B?
Yes, ma'am. The hardware that we need, we will order, we will procure out of Schedule C. Now, just to indicate what has been procured out of that Schedule C so far, procurement by the Division Technology Management Services, which is equipment and consumables, are as indicated there, the barcode printers, the ribbons and those things, biometric fingerprint readers, and the total value with regards to that which was procured by TMS is 48.6 million. Further procurements by TMIS, these ones went into the processing of exhibits, the FPS and the PIVA project. The first page, you can see the items we have listed them there, what is the item and what were the quantities. It continues on slide number 38. It's still the same, those lens cameras, light sources, polyray. Page 39 would then show you the total amount that we paid for all the above, which comes to 543.8 million. Slide number 40, it shows then what we procured out of Schedule D by the Division Forensic Science Services. On the left-hand side, again, is the item description. We have got the cabinet, we have got the laptop, Panasonic, we have the gloves, high-risk, non-sterile and those things. It goes on, it continued on slide 41, the light sources, the software for cameras, and slide number 42, the rest of what was procured, and it brings us to the total value of 206.5 million. In terms of the deployment status of PCAM version 1.1, we have replaced the IMS at FSL, and then this slide indicates the site where we have got PCAM version 1.1 and what area within the environment of the forensics. Say, for instance, at Acadia, we have got the biology air environment, and the status is that we have completed the replacement of IMS, and we have got 420 users who were trained. And then the next one is the Silverton site, ballistics, chemistry, and SAU, as well as case reception. On the right-hand side is the number of users that we have trained. But in terms of the SAU, the polygraph completed, 5 users trained, and then we still have training for 69 users that is outstanding. But the users have been registered and the site was configured. So that is still work in progress. We continue indicating the other sites, the KZN site, ballistics and chemistry, we have 77 and 34 users. The PE site, we have got 49, 26, 25 users. The Western Cape Delft, 101 users that were trained. Then the Western Cape SOM Camp, 65 users completed training. For the question document, site completed and training is still to be done. The Platteburg, there have not been any installations by the PCAM team. These were done by CETA. And the status is that that has already also been completed. But with Platteburg, question documents and biology, our training is still outstanding. Then it continues in Silverton, future deployments in terms of the PCAM version 1.1. We have got the SIU image analysis, the materials analysis in Silverton, gunshot residue, the general pit you bear question document, water flooded work, as well as the biology flooded work. Mm-hmm. Well, on the right hand side we indicate what we will still be able, will still be doing at this site. This is a summary. This slide shows, slide number 47 shows us a summary of the number of registered PCAM users as at the 6th of June 2012. In total, we have got 1,394 people who are registered and using PCAM version 1.1. Then the next one is the number of item registrations on PCAM. From, we took it from May 2011 to May 2012. The total at all FSL components is 896. And then we went in and looked at the highest number of registrations in 1 month, and we found that that month was October 2011. The highest total over the period, it is the National Head Office Biology, where we have got 327,000 items that are registered on PCAM. Now, this one looks at the total number of transactions on PCAM. The same period, May 2011 to May 2012. The total at FSL is 5.9 million. The highest number of transactions happened in the month of March 2012, which was 553,063. And then the highest total over the period was also by the head office biology section at 2.2 million. So this would include what they received, registration, handover, change location, and so on, disposal of items processed, that were processed using PCAM version 1.1 within the FSL environment. I thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
This is the presentation. I'm going to take hands. Honorable Kulabana, Honorable Mulubati.
Thank you, Chair. One of the partners involved is from Forensic Data Analysis, Mr. Keith Keating, who's a former SAPS member. So obviously there are concerns that the close relationship of FDA and Mr. Keating with SAPS may have unfairly influenced the award. So please run us through that and tell us how involved Mr. Keating was, and tell us if there was any possibility at all that he in any way influenced the award. Then there's this bizarre situation where many PCAM items needed seem to have been excluded from the main contract. Of course, they're purchased, as you said, on Schedule D, which means that to date we don't actually have an indication of what the actual total cost of this contract is. So we, the 183 million for PCAM is not the actual price, because indeed we've seen Schedule D being used to procure over 750 or more million rands worth of additional goods and services and not attend a call. All fell to, do you say Unisys? Okay. They seem to have benefited unfairly from the use of the Schedule D. Where were the tenders? Where were the quotes? Where were the bidders? How did it work? So that is a problem. And, you know, one then says, well, was there some sort of manipulation by the Integrated Justice System Board or SAPS or Unisys or whoever? So please just fill us in on what happened there with that process, how this decision was taken. And also there's the issue of the fact that the 180 million excluded all hardware. So that was certainly additional to the contract price. What we need is a basic final price of the entire process. Elaborate, please, also on the role of CETA. It seems very odd that SATRA claims to emphasize the role of CETA in recommendations, who they say recommended that the award go to UNISIS, but CETA is denying all knowledge of this. So how is that possible? And, you know, the biggest concern here to me is the DNA database. We're busy processing the legislation, we're on track, and I don't know that this is going to be ready for when we pass the bill. And it has to be. We can't pass the legislation unless we can implement the legislation, and the legislation can't be implemented without the system in place. So we need time frames, please. Finally, the software and software updates. There's no mention of that at all, as far as I could find. And I'd like to know what processes, again, have been looked at, where is it referred to, and once again, what is the situation with maintenance contracts? Where are they? Who's going to undertake the maintenance? Is it simply dished out to the same company again? And if so, what is the great attraction in this company? Because they seem to be making a fortune when they simply landed quite a small, in real terms, contract.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question is, how many sub-members were on the big evaluation committee? Second one is, who was the chairperson of the BID committee? My third one, the contract that was signed with UNICEF, are you convinced and satisfied that there were no discrepancies? Fourth one, is UNICEF benefiting from the use of Schedule D, I'm sorry. My last question, what is UNICEF's obligation in terms of the training of users, and what is the cost? Thank you.
Honourable Legetu, Honourable Poppy, Honourable Sibion.
Chair, I've got just one question here. I think before the contract was, as the document shows, was well deliberated upon, and a decision was taken ultimately, and there was a necessity to have this contract signed by that time. My question is, you are saying that the contract will expire of December 2014. I just need to know, what are the plans beyond December 2014, because if you abruptly cut the system, then it doesn't take us anywhere. Thanks.
Thanks, Chairperson. And let me first apologize for arriving late to this meeting. I was in another meeting in the morning, since morning, Science and Technology, so my apology. Chairperson, the adjudication bid is indicated that it is composed of both CETA members and SAF members. What I'd like to find out is, okay, there was a committee, but who set out the requirements for the bid? Who did come up with this? Is what were the requirements or the standards for the bid? For the tender or whatever. The other thing, Chairperson, was this, the consumables and the equipment, were they excluded from the initial contract when that was being set? The consumables and the equipment that were then to be procured through the Schedule D process. So that's what I would like to find out.
It seems as if the project is behind the schedule. And what is the purpose of the of this schedule, which in fact makes the value of the contract with UNICEF meaningless? Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you. Couple, Mr. Stewart, Mr. George. Stewart first. Mr. Stewart first.
Thank you, Chair. UNICEF supplied Schedule D to a value of more or less 799 million on a 118 million contract. What happened to the procurement policy in SACS? Why was that circumvented?
Mr. George.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Thank you very much, General, for the information. This question has already been answered. I want to compliment you. You said that the Bid Evaluation Committee consisted of SAPS and CETA. So there's a part now which now it says the BAC report sent to CETA for recommendation. The question is, why was it over? Probably if you can elaborate this, what was the role of CETA in this whole thing? Because you were both working together. But now the recommendation comes from CETA. Because I think to us it will help us if you can just tell us probably what are the role of CETA in this project. Because you only mentioned CETA at that level, but a very funny situation. And also probably if you can tell us who else was involved. Why I'm asking who else, because you did not talk to us, which is the question Bobby also asked, who drafted the specifications and all those things. You see. Well, the question of excluding other items, it has already been asked. But I would be very interested if you can tell us, because there's been a lot of costs which have been listed. If you can probably, even if it's an estimate, as to how much will this PKM project cost eventually. I wouldn't believe that you would go into a situation with your eyes closed. Surely you should be knowing what you are budgeting for. There is the issue of people who were linked to FDA and who were involved. To what extent can one say this was a clean procurement project? The gentleman has been mentioned who was once in SAPS and now he in UNICEF. If you can. And seeing that, is there implementation issue that is not covered in the contract? If there is one, how much will it cost? You see, because the way things have been coming, they've been coming drip and drag, so probably there might be other costs which have not been covered. If you know of any, it would help us if you tell us. Of course, also I would be interested in what Constable Lekhoto raised. What happens after 2014? Because we are busy with a bill. I don't believe that bill is it ends at 2014.
Chair, apologies, I left one of my questions out, if I may just put that before we start the answers. There seem to be discrepancies in the information given to us in relation to the scope of the project. Now, initially it said it was said that it would be implemented in 4,750 locations, and now it seems to have been downgraded to simply the forensic science labs and the police stations. So please fill us in on what happened there, and how does that relate to the final contract drawn up? It seems also that the implementation at the labs was to be complete by now, right now, finished, and implementation at 150 stations should be complete next year. Is that on track? I don't think so. Is it? I want to believe so, but frankly, I'm quite skeptical these days.
Honourable Ndlovu.
Chairperson, this project is supposed to talk to the CJS and IJS, Integrated Justice System. Does it talk to each other? Does it use the same budget from these other departments who are in component of CJS and IJCS? If the answer is yes, can we be told where? Because most of the funds that are allocated in this project are ring-fenced. Where does it come out from? The second question that I wanted to raise, the total of 183 million, is it the final total, or is it a subtotal of the final total? What is the real total number of the contract? Because I can say that the negotiation started from 262 million down to 183. Now, I just want to know, 183 is the final figure, or is it a starting figure which has other components that will be built in, that will go back to the first figure that we are coming from? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Ndlovu. A couple of questions from my side as well. First question, explain to us the difference between the PKM project and the PKM system. And I think you should start off by answering that question, because I think that's key in terms of what the rest of the questions speak to. What and you know, why the differentiation, and also in terms of cost, what are we talking about? Can you indicate to us whether you at any point in time did a comparative study to see whether the EMS system that you used could actually, if it was rolled out in full, could actually have been used for the same purpose, and comparatively what would have the cost been? In other words, was it possible to adapt the EMS system? The question has already been asked who was on the Bid Evaluation Committee, and I think it's important that we get that answer. We have received information that one of the Deputy National Commissioners refused to sign this contract because of concerns. And that it was signed, as you've indicated, by General Nguyenya, COO. Yeah, I'm trying to be diplomatic about this issue. I'm trying to be extremely diplomatic about this issue. Because we also have information that the contract was brought by a person who was finishing after receiving Section 35 for signature.
and I'm talking about substantively. Can we get an indication why was it that the Deputy National Commissioner refused to sign the contract? Why was it that the COO signed the contract? Is it normal practice? And it worries me because we've also heard it from Tetra. Tetra was a brigadier that signed the contract. Is there no regulation, standing order in place in terms of who signs contracts in SAPS on behalf of SAPS? What was the dispute around the signing of this contract? Members have asked the question of the involvement of the ex-member of SAPS who comes from this environment in this contract. You've got to answer that question for us in terms of whether that person was involved in establishing the requirements for the contract as well. This contract is extremely confusing, insofar as that you keep on saying to us the cost is 180 million rand. The fact of the matter is we all know that's not the cost of the project. Why was the contract designed in such a way that you could, through Schedule D, buy equipment that, from the look of it, is not directly related to PKN? I mean, General Shazi is here. Surely, when you talk about blood kits, etc., etc., those are things that goes out on tender, I would presume. There are other people that can now, out there, that can supply, that can tender for this, etc. But if we understand this contract correctly, Schedule D, and it, for me, it then makes, it's no surprise that Unisys were then willing to say, okay, we'll cut the price from 200 and something to 180 something, because we will make our money through Schedule D. Suddenly, Unisys, who is supposed to be providing a solution, an information technology solution, which would explain the involvement of CETA, is now, through quotation, ignoring the treasury requirements around these issues, can now, through quotation, provide you with things that's got nothing to do with the system. And it's actually 799 million, not the 700 and something that you've given us here. 799 million. Is it true that vehicles were bought through Schedule D? 12 vehicles. And I believe they at CETA's head office. And I believe it has been confirmed that they are there. I believe that they're talking about the average price of the vehicles is at 250,000 rand a vehicle. Members have already indicated that ring fence funding is supposed to be used very specifically. We all know that. We all know treasury regulations around ring fence funding. And we need the department to be honest with us in terms of what is happening here. Is Schedule D being abused to buy things that's got nothing to do with PKN? It's obviously abused because you're not going out on tender. You're asking a information technology company now to provide you with blood kits and with gloves and whatever else. And it seems like we're going in this contract the same way we're going with Waymark, where there was a similar situation. If it's
illegal, Schedule D, is it not unethical? It is true that the IHS board can relocate funds, ring-fence funds, but within the program. With other words, for what it was supposed to be ring-fence for, not outside of the program. So transport vehicles, equipment like gloves and things that you use and you stop using it, should not be part of it. Not according to what the IJS funds, the ring-fence funds, is considered to be focused on. Are you using Schedule D to get around Treasury regulations? And if I say you, I'm not talking about the people sitting here. That's not what I'm saying. If you evaluate the bid response of Unisys, FDA's partnership role is very apparent in it. Has the department looked at that? Did the bid committee at any point discuss FDA's involvement in this? If you are comfortable with what's happening, why did you suggest previously that we call Unisys to this meeting, the consortium to this meeting? Surely it is not our duty to interact with your service providers. We would presume that you have made sure that you've got a watertight contract. There's discrepancies with the contract scope and the value. Makes provision for delivery of 627 million rands worth of work items at a range of sites, including courts, limited, police stations, forensic science laboratories. Yet, when we look at what is currently there, what has been delivered and what is planned, some of these disappear, courts for instance. What is not covered in the 183 million rand contract? What is not covered? And what is the cost of that that is not covered? At some point in time, the department itself acknowledged that it's got concerns around Schedule D. And that it's actually being used to procure items that have nothing to do with PKM. But you then try and say that it's IJS can reprioritize funds. But I repeat again, they can only reprioritize within the scope of what the IJS is supposed to be doing. Now, if we look at the items, it's clearly not that. And the fact that Unisys is the company benefiting from this 799 million, 750 million, three quarters of a billion, is extremely problematic to us. Why was it allowed in the first instance? Why was Schedule D allowed in the first instance to be part of the contract? Is it usual, is it practice, is it acceptable to have such an open-ended contract with a service provider? From a legal perspective, who scrutinized this contract?
got a couple of more questions. I'm sorry, but I mean, over and above the contract price, the 183 million, October 2011, total of 503 million worth of items were purchased under Schedule B. Over the 2011-12 financial year. You then say that it was part of the IJS, but it's not if you look at it, and it does not relate to PKM directly. How is it possible that we give a contract to a company to do X, but we pay them to do Y, Z, A, B, and C? July 2012, the figure has expanded even further. Total 48.6 million has been spent under the schedule for PKM items, equipment and consumables. 543.8 million has been procured or spent for exhibits, FPS, PIVA projects, and 206.5 million for FSL and the Criminal Records Centre. Total of 799 million spent through this schedule. So, apart from the 183 million, the project has already been expanded by additional 48.6 million. That's coming to 230 million. There goes your saving. Plus, UNICEF have benefited a further 750 million plus. I think the committee needs to look at the interested parties within UNICEF as well. You gave us a MTF requirements, total funding requirements for PKM, and you know, these things just keep on changing. MTF requirement total in 2011-12, 2012-13, 2013-14 requirement 627 million, received actual allocation 161 million, deficit 466 million. Again, where does this 183 million contract price come in? You need to explain to us as a matter of urgency the discrepancy between the contract price and the project summary cost requirements. And if there's a discrepancy between the system and the project, then you need to tell us that, and you need to tell us what the discrepancy is and what the cost is. I'm going to stop at that. I've got more questions. I'm definitely going to allow us to ask a further set of questions. But let's stop at this and give the department an opportunity to respond and plead with the department. Play open cards so that we don't have to come back until we get the real picture, please.
Honourable Chairperson, I will talk to the question about the CETA. This is one of those contracts where if the SAPS needs to advertise, we request CETA to advertise for us. It still becomes an SAPS project, but it is advertised by CETA, and then we do the evaluation. CETA and our members, they do the evaluation. And of course, because CETA is managing the process of putting the contract in place, then they will submit it to their recommendation committee, who will look at it and then bring it. So it's one of the projects. We have got a number of projects which we don't advertise ourselves, and so that is how CETA was involved. And of course, because the company gets appointed by the SAPS, CETA will recommend to us to say, okay, this is the company we have evaluated, this is the company that is recommended, and we can go ahead and appoint it. Now, Honorable Chairperson, right from the beginning, to be frank and open, the lot of questions that have been asked here are the questions that we do not have answers for. Most of the work, as well as the negotiations for the different schedules, and especially when it comes to Schedule D, was done with the general that was appointed as the CIO for the police, and she was responsible for these kinds of ISM contracts. And that is why with our presentation we decided that we want to make everything visible and to show that out of these contracts we procured things such as the gloves and sterile water and other things which the Chairperson has highlighted. That's why we made it visible that these are the things which suggest that Schedule D was developed so that we can procure more and more things that are, some of these things are linked to the PCAM, and they are also equipment that contribute towards, I will use my own language, towards the building of the PCAM system. You know, so some of these items do contribute towards that, but of course there are others which we have questioned, which we feel we could have advertised the tender and you know, given it to anybody else, but not the PCAM. But Honorable Chairperson, I would like to request, okay, now, just one with regards to the signing of contracts on behalf of the SAPF. That delegation has now been given to the Deputy National Commissioner responsible for fiscal resource management. So I'm talking to that one of the brigadier, why the brigadier was made to sign. He had the delegation as he was responsible for contract management. But now we have adjusted it that only the DNC for fiscal resource management signs. The question which I am not able to answer, I have been inquiring. I even informed the general when she came in. I discussed with General Thunder as well as the COO. I asked them this question, which DNC refused to sign? It could have been DNC Stella because he was responsible for this environment of TMS. General Thunder has indicated it's not him. General Mgwenya could not remember that there was a DNC who refused to sign. So that question I also do not have an answer for, but I will continue to check. Maybe I must even follow up with General Stella if he will be willing to cooperate with me and tell me that. But I do not know who is this DNC that refused to sign and why. Maybe, but I'm just commenting. Probably this was signed by General Mgwenya because at the time when General Stella came in, I can remember that a lot of things were supposed to go via General Mgwenya as the appointed COO. So maybe that was the reason that whoever refused to sign gave it to her or what, but we are still trying to get information on that. I will request my colleagues maybe to respond to the other questions as well.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, General. I will handle some of the questions, and I'm going to rely on General Kabela as well to add, because he has the background, the historical background and some of these things. But the question I want to start with is the one of the involvement of FDA and Mr. Keith Keating. Mr. Keating was a police officer, and he resigned around the late 90s to start his own company. He has been doing a lot of work with the police. In fact, around 2003, he was asked to develop the EMS solution because there was a problem in the forensic labs where the drugs were being stolen. At that time, his company was working in the motor vehicle theft unit. They were doing some covert work in that area. So his company then developed the EMS solution. So if there is an understanding that UNICEF maybe had an unfair advantage, it's probably because of the partnership with FDA, who had the inside knowledge of the EMS solution. So the PCAM version 1.1 is really a replication of EMS, but written on a modern platform. Technology speak, it's what we call the .NET platform. So that was the difference between the EMS and the PCAM version 1.1. So it was basically an off-the-shelf solution written on a more modern platform, but basically doing the same functionality as EMS. The version 1.x, which is the later version, is again on a different technology platform, which is the standard for SEPs that has been adopted across the board. In fact, the whole ITS system is based on the Java standard. So the later version is on that standard, and secondly, much more expanded. There are more exhibit types that are catered for, such as firearms and motor vehicles and so on. So it's not just the lab and the drugs that were being catered for under EMS. I think the general talk on the role of CETA, I think that was enough. The software updates and maintenance for PCAM, we've done a few things, which after our own concerns, because I must say that the same concerns that are being raised here, this management here has raised those concerns. But obviously we don't want to come here and start blaming the past and say whoever made that decision. Is something that we have to live with now. What we have done in this particular case in terms of maintenance, General Buthelezi, who is in charge of the whole application development environment, is putting together a team. We also want to put together an intensive program where we can have our own people who can then take over this development and the maintenance going forward. In terms of systems development, that is standard practice. Even if you buy an off-the-shelf package, be it Oracle or the SAP, you must have your own skills that can do the maintenance and enhancements. As legislation changes, you want people who can actually incorporate those changes in the system. So we cannot rely on a supplier. So by the end of that contract, I can assure the House that we will have our own capability in-house to maintain the system. How many staff members are in this BEC? I don't have the information. What do we have?
In terms of how many subs members were in the BEC committee, we had 10 subs members in the BEC committee and 6 representatives from CETA. And the committee was chaired by a subs member. It was chaired by Kenneth Masuku Dan, he is now a brigadier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe to clarify on the issue of the BEC, it was separated into 3. The first one, there was a team that was that conducted the technical specification evaluation, which comprised of 12 members, of which 3 of them were from CETA, 9 were from SAPS members. Then another one was the pricing, 1 member from SAPS and the 1 member from CETA. And on the evaluation of the BEE and HDI, there were 2 members from CETA that conducted that. In total, the total number of the BEC that evaluated this tender were 14, where I beg your pardon, were 16. Then the process that is followed, after the BEC has finished with the evaluation, they make their recommendation and do the submission to the Bid Adjudication Committee of CETA, which is comprised of only CETA personnel, or should I say CETA officials, who look at the processes that were followed by the BEC if Did the BEC follow the due processes and all that what is, was expected of them to follow? After satisfying themselves with the processes that were followed by the BEC, they then make the recommendation to the SAPS, the accounting officer in this case, which is the National Commissioner. After that, it is the prerogative of the National Commissioner to decide whether the awarding letter is signed by him or the delegated senior officer that is decided by the National Commissioner. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You know, you can continue if there's anything more.
Thank you. Schedule D. We have, as this management, have had great concerns on Schedule D. Because when the contract was put in place, or the, when the tender was published, it did not cater for these items. So, again, the process by which these schedules were negotiated, it really, from a management and governance perspective, we really can't find a way to defend it. This is why we have decided to stop all procurement on Schedule D. We have put together a tender for those items that are on Schedule D. The tender, to my knowledge, is now at the supply chain. So we will be procuring these items via a proper vehicle because the items are needed. The forensic science lab does need those items, just that the vehicle that was used to procure them was, in our view, a wrong vehicle. Because even those that are being used by PCAM, there could have been a proper vehicle put in place to procure those items. So that is a matter that, as I'm sitting here, I can say to you, we are in full agreement that that was not the right way to do a contract.
Let them just finish the answering.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. In terms of what is the difference between the PCAM project and the PCAM system, I think I will answer that question by saying PCAM is a... It's an IJS initiative which is funded from the IJS budget, the portion of the IJS budget allocated to the police. As a project, it has got a scope of managing exhibits, like it was indicated in one of the slides, to manage exhibits from point of possession, take possession, which on a process level include the processing of crime scene. That's why, and we called in our bid specs, we called for a 10C solution to include all items that would be necessary for the PCAM system to be functional and even for those items that would lead to innovation. So the project as is at the end of the day should result on an automated system. So the project was an initiative from IJS with a big scope to manage exhibits, take possession as a point of departure which include the processing of exhibits back into the substation stores, and then any exhibit that needs to be taken to FSL for processing, and then back again to substation stores, and again, if any exhibit has to be presented in court, that the whole process in between should be managed within the PCAM system at the end of the day when the system is fully functional. So from, if I understood the question clearly in terms of differentiating between a project and a system. You initiate a project with a big requirement. At the end of the day, it needs to result in a system because this was an IT project. So it has to give us an automated system at the end of the day. As far as the bid specs are concerned, the bid specs are formulated by SAPS because we've got functional requirements and a technical requirement. So those requirements are formulated by SAPS. And CETA only focuses on the main bid documentation, and then once those requirements have been finalized by SAPS, they get approval, and then they are being sent to CETA, whereby CETA now put the whole documentation in place, and then from there on, SAPS will approve the bid documentation and give it to CETA for awarding.
Is there anybody from the department that wants to say something?
Yes, Madam Chair. There were a lot of other questions. For instance, was there a study done to see if EAMS had been rolled out in full as opposed to procuring it PCAM? I'll let the Brigadier or the General answer to that because I'm not aware of such a study. Question on...
Not aware of such a study taking place. Based, the reason why I'm asking this question is this PCAM system is based on the EMS system. So could we not have used the EMS system and just rolled it out in full? Was it necessary to go back to PCAM and there was an analysis done to see what would have been the cost effect, etc.? And he's saying that he's not aware that such a study was done beforehand.
Okay, before I address that one in terms of adapting EMS to see whether it couldn't be rolled out to the whole of SAPS components, I think that was not an option then because SAPS already had standardized on Java, like the General has already indicated that all IGS projects have standardized on Java platform, so EMS was on a .NET framework, so it was not an option to consider EMS, rolling out EMS throughout the project. And as far as the... And obviously the scope of EMS was limited as the need was specifically for the drug stores.
Can you clarify, because earlier it was said that PCAM is from the .NET system. Now you're saying it's the other way around.
PCAM version 1.1 is the .NET platform. The PCAM version 1X is a Java platform. Okay, in terms of Schedule D, I think the General has already alluded in terms of Schedule D. What we requested in our specification, we said we need a turnkey solution and there needs to be a procurement mechanism for if we needed to buy items to make PCAM a working solution. And if those items are not available in any existing contract, then this contract must provide for that mechanism. So that is just a little bit in support of why actually Schedule D is in existence, but the General has already indicated that staff of the department is aware of the issues around Schedule D and we are not happy about how it was done. The implementation around PCAM 1.1 is within biology section. PCAM version 1.1 was intended to replace EMS, where EMS was in existence. That's how the contract was drafted. At a later stage, we were requested by the relevant Divisional Commissioner of Forensics to even roll out PCAM 1.1, where EMS was not in existence. And obviously, that necessitated us to procure the necessary hardware in terms of rolling out that system at the biology section. So as we are speaking, the only influencing factor as far as that is concerned is just a matter of the network issues that needs to be sorted at Plateau Kloof for us to commission the system. But the equipment has been purchased, and then we're just awaiting the network to be finalized, and then we can install the equipment, train people, and install the software.
Thank you, Chair. I think your request is based on what we had presented the last week when we were here in terms of the DNA. The question that was asked was what are the timelines in terms of the implementation thereof. Amongst other answers that I had provided, the limited resources within the environment can be able to roll out the full process in full. I could not at this stage provide what the timelines are in terms of the rolling out of the full process. The colleagues are correct in saying that the PCAM is rolled throughout the forensics. The process is still ongoing. It hasn't been finalized as yet. Network challenges, as Brigadier Ngaki had alluded to, are very serious concerns. I'm not sure if
they will be sorted out, though, quite frankly, anytime soon. I think it's also beyond their scope. So those are a number of challenges that in-house we are experiencing. I cannot still confirm, Madam Chair, to when exactly will the full rollout occur in terms of the rolling out of PKM from the exhibit track and trace solution. Amongst others, in the Schedule D was the labware. The labware was part of the presentation that was alluded to in terms of configuration. It is still at a scientific analysis. It's not as yet for the DNA side where the questions were asked in the previous week. There are no resources as well to do that for the DNA side. The project or the pilot will determine from the scientific point of view whether it will be suitable enough to be rolling it on also to the DNA testing. But I am aware that the colleagues are working on the matter to find solutions. But to date, I cannot say for sure that when the contracts come to an end in December, we shall have rolled out as anticipated in the PKM Lake, because it's also part of those Schedule D items that we were to embark on. There hasn't been an expenditure, as Ramaphosa had highlighted, on the 14 million that was budgeted for the labware. It is a configuration only for the scientific analysis, where the user requirements are being worked on, not as yet for the DNA portion of it. So that's a little bit of the challenges in-house, but I am aware that Brigadier Nag is working on some of these issues.
Continue, please.
Thank you, Chair. On the question of the signature on the contract where a member had signed, there are a lot of grey areas that personally I cannot give the answer to the committee in full. I do know that the CIO at that time actually was off sick when the contract was being signed, so he made a note on the contract, the CIO, the Chief Information Officer at that time, made a note that she is off sick, but when she came back to the office, she did sign. So the date at which she signed is actually after the date that the contract was signed by the COO. That is the background to the whole thing. Was FDA involved in drawing up the set? I think an honest answer would be to say most probably. They had developed the EMS solution. They were around. I'm sure they were asked to contribute to the development of the specification. The issue of vehicles, Madam Chair, I am as shocked as yourself, because this is the first time I hear that there are vehicles that are brought on the schedule date. I'm not sure if any of my colleagues are aware of that. And the ICTA. We will definitely investigate that, because we have no money. Did the PEC discuss involvement of FDA? I'm not sure. Do you want to comment, General, on that one?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, during the PEC evaluation committee, the FDA issue was never discussed. It was never discussed. I know that for sure, because I was also one of the PEC evaluation committee members that were evaluating the technical specification on that. That was never discussed.
It should have been discussed, given the fact that the General just acknowledged that one would presume that they were involved in drafting the specs. Is that it never come up in the BEC that there might be a conflict of interest here?
Madam Chair, in the BEC, look at the structure of the consortium if the bidders are not independent, it's the consortium that submitted their response, but does not discuss the individual partner of the consortium. On the issue of compiling the specification,
Sorry, Madam Chair, can you elaborate what does it mean if you say that it does not discuss the individual in the consortium. What does that mean?
Thank you, Madam Chair. By referring to the individual, I mean the partners in the consortium of the respondents. For instance, in this case, the consortium comprised of four companies. The prime bidder was Unisys, there was FBA, there was Batsumi, and there was Pinnacle as well. Oh, the fifth one, there were five. The fifth one was Waymark. They all form part of the consortium that responded to this tender. So we just look at the structure. On the administration part, in terms of the documentation that is required, that is done by the CETA during the initial screening to check whether all the necessary documents like the tax clearances have been submitted, the number of board members, the names of the board members, did they sign according, that is done by CETA. But the bid evaluation committee, especially as I indicated earlier, that it was separated into three. That is the first one, that was of the 12 members that look at the technical specification, the second one that looked at the price, and the last one that looked at the BEE and HDI, which were two members from CETA. The BEC focuses on the technical response of the submission. And if I move on to the compilation of the specification, under no circumstances where I can recall that FDA played a role. Why I'm saying that, if that was done, it might have been through the members who were in that committee that were submitting the requirements when the requirements were drawn up, but not the representatives of FDA personally. Not that I know of, at least. Because when the specifications were drawn up, the requirements initially came from the FSL environment, which they sent their representatives who were going to submit the requirements and contribute in terms of the compiling of the specification. And the second requirement came from the division visible policing, where they submitted the requirements in terms of all the SAP 13 items that need to be catered for in the PCAM, as well as the firearm issues that have to be catered for as well, that requirement. Under no circumstances that I can say FDA played a role. If there is maybe that information or suspicion that FDA did play a role, maybe through a certain person, but it was never visible to us. That I can confirm.
Can I ask you please to tell me, what does RFB stand for?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. RFB stands for Request for Bid.
So that's where the specs get thrown up.
Come again, ma'am.
Where the specs get drawn up.
Yes, we draw the specification. After the specification is drawn up, then we compile the entire tender document. Then we submit the request for bid to CETA.
I want you to explain to us, RFB, is that where the specs are drawn up?
That's correct. That's right, ma'am, based on the requirements.
Can you explain to me why 10 members of the BEC sat on that committee? On the RFD committee?
Well, that I cannot explain. This was the decision that was taken by the management at the time, who decided on the nominees of the BEC.
Not only did the bid evaluation committee decide on the bid, they actually drawn up the specs for the bid. 10 of SAP's 32 members were BEC members. 2 members of CETA was part of the RFB.
No, the CETA members never participated in the drawing up of the RFB. On the BEC members, the RFB were drawn up by the members of SAPS. CETA personnel was never involved. Whoever submitted that information to say CETA members were involved in the drawing up of the specification misled the committee. That's not true.
I am quite sure of what you are saying now. But the last sentence that you are saying now, are you quite sure of what you are saying now?
Yes, I am sure, Babundu. Because during the drawing up of the specification, There were also committees that were formed. There are documents as well. After compiling the specification, there was a steering committee that was formed, which was verifying the specification that was drawn up by the project team.
Sorry, just before, I'll come to you, Mr. George. I can give you the names of the two people of CETA. Maybe it will refresh your memory, but for me, that's not even the worst part of it, the CETA's involvement there. That's not the worst part of it. For me, the involvement of 10 members, a third of this specs committee, were BEC members. We've raised this issue previously with SAPS, of having the people that are drafting the requirements on the BID evaluation committee. We've raised it before. And the other thing that worries me in terms of this, the signing off of this contract, the contract was signed off in 2010. At that time, if I remember correctly, members of the committee must please refresh my memory if I'm wrong, it was at the time that the previous national commissioner said every contract over 500,000 rand must be signed off by himself. Am I correct?
Exactly.
10 members of the BID evaluation committee. So we referee, we player.
That's where my question lies, Chairperson. Who signed, who drew this specimen? And then, at the end, as the Chairperson is saying, the player and the referee. That's my problem.
George, you want to make a comment or ask a question?
No, I just wanted to make a comment. I'm worried about the statement made by the Brigadier General, but you see, this is Parliament. The language he uses is very, very important. Because you can cost one of your colleagues a job and find yourself, because it is a serious offense to deliberately misleading Parliament. You cannot say that. Because even the way I'm speaking, you don't seem to be sure. I would rather advise you, for the sake of that person you're talking about, more to use the questionable language like the others have done. If you don't know, say so. But because also what the chairperson has got and what you are saying are two different things. But you already say whoever. So effectively, you are nailing that person. I don't know him or her.
My apologies, there were 3 CETA members. 10 BEC members. And 21 SAPS.
Let's repeat that, maybe they didn't hear it properly.
There were 3 CETA members. But the one is SAPS ISM stroke CETA. 2 CETA members, just CETA. 21 SAPS members and 10 SAPS BEC members. And this comes from the department. It's not our typing up. It's not our creation. This comes from the department as part of the information that we've requested in preparation for this committee meeting. I think you must leave it at that, if I can advise General. Leave it at that. It's clear it was wrong for BEC members to be part of it. That's the first thing. We've raised it before, over and over and over again, that it shouldn't happen. I remember in a meeting in the old assembly, where we had this discussion about the BID committee, the BEC, the evaluation committee, the final adjudication, everything, and the fact that SAPs are messing up as far as that is concerned. Do you still have questions that you need to answer? Because there are further questions. So just answer these first round of questions. Are there outstanding questions?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. There is one. Advice noted, and to the Honourable Member.
No, sorry, it's not advice noted.
In terms of the strong language,
okay.
That Honourable Member
indicated,
that's one. Yes, I'm acknowledging that. Thanks. There is one question which referred to the, was the, what was the legal involvement in terms of the signing of the contract. Yes, legal services was involved in terms of the signing of the contract. They participated from the negotiation up until the signing off of the contract. Such legal services did participate in the signing of the contract. That is the question that was still remaining. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Moni, you still had some that you wanted to answer. I'll come to you.
Yes, Madam Chair, there was a question about the discrepancy between the 183 million and what was submitted in the MTF as a requirement for PCAM. Can we come back to you later on that, because we need to just check our information.
Is it necessary to check MTF figures that you provided to us as a department during the budget process? I don't understand that. You can come back later to us. I don't want us to waste time on it, but I'm just asking, why is it necessary to come back to us on something that was submitted by yourselves to us?
No, that was the last one, Madam Chair.
Honourable Kula Barnett, I also have some further questions that I would like to ask. Honourable Kula Barnett.
Yes, I've just got one, and it actually came out of a statement made a little earlier on, where it was stated, we have now stopped all procurement on Schedule D. Now, I looked through the presentation three times, and I didn't see that referred to. Maybe I've missed it three times. I don't understand how that was not referred to in the presentation and why it only came up once we started raising issues about Schedule D. You really only seem to mention once we started questioning the legality of the Section D process. Now, UNICEF has already, it seems, benefited massively from it. So what I have to ask is, how long has this team in front of us today been in charge of this project? Or is everybody here before us today brand new? Brand new in the process, in that you're suddenly all distancing yourself from this terrible historical blunder. You're saying it was all a big mistake and we can't answer for history, and we can't defend this, and now we've stopped it. But surely this has been going on for a very long time. You're not all new. You can't possibly all be new. Let's ask it. Is there no one here before us today who was involved at the time the Schedule D system was created, which is already being used to procure over 750 million rands worth of additional goods and services that have no relation to PCAM project, and all were through UNICEF, which has benefited what looks to be unfairly in the use of Schedule D? Where were the tenders? Where were the quotes? What was called? No, it was just dished out to this company. Very bizarre situation, and I see you all taking a leap 3 feet back, but you're here, and this has been ongoing. So I fail to understand that sentence completely.
The Reverend from KwaZulu-Natal, and then the Reverend from the Eastern Cape.
Chairperson, did they answer the question of 183 million? Did they answer that? The total? Because I wanted to do a follow up on that one, because I know that they have negotiated from 260 million down to 183. But if you put all these other things together, it's way over 262 million that they negotiated in the first place. This is why I was asking, maybe I missed that question. If they have an answer, I just want to do a follow up on that one when they answer the question. Thanks.
I think the answer is that currently they can't really tell us what the total cost is, because if you add what Schedule D and what was spent already, we're talking more than a billion rand and not 183 million.
Chairperson, is that the response you are giving me?
I wanted that response because I wanted to ask the question. Because there are areas that those funds were ring-fenced. That's where I wanted to ask a question. Where did they get this other money from? That's my question. You see, it comes from this side to this side, but at the end, there is there is money that is ring-fenced in between. Where did they get the money from? From here, which is ring-fenced. Did they use this ring-fenced money to do something else which is outside the ring-fenced? That's where my question lies. We have helped them, but now they will respond. Thank you.
Well, George, Honourable Chini.
Madam Chair, unfortunately, we will see the gentleman behind, but he talks about General Guterres is putting up a team together. And that thing is not in the presentation, but if you look at what is General Guterres is supposed to be, he's a brigadier. Okay, so he's a brigadier, in fact, defense brigadiers, but they've got brigadier generals in defense. But what I'm saying, you see, last week we got a very good presentation from General Shiv. We're very impressed, but what is said today worries me, because he says General Guterres is putting a team. It is not said how this general, when is this team going to work, when is it going to finish, because it has got an impact on the work which, or on the bid which we are going to talk about. But also my query would, why is this plan of Guterres is not put in there? The second part is, you see, this person, they said, well, we got a recommendation from, I wanted to ask at that time, do you accept whatever Sita says as gospel truth? Because you seem to be passing the buck now. Because we've got an advantage, you would more, if you look at when you said, I'm talking what you said, what the chairperson said, yet about eight, or in fact, more than half, there were only three or so from Sita. Why do you want to give an impression that you depend solely on the recommendation of Sita, which were farther than you in the BEC?
Honourable Poppy.
Once more, thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, earlier on, I asked who drafted the requirement of the specification. What I'd like to find out is why these consumables and equipment, why was there no tender? When did SAPS realize that they are going to need these consumables and equipment separately? And why wasn't part of maybe the specifications, or why wasn't these also put on tender separately, because they realize that they're going to need these things? So that's what I want. Did they wake up after the whole process was completed and realize no, we are missing something else? And what else then is still missing, which they are going to discover or uncover in the process of the implementation of this thing? Thanks.
I've got a couple of questions that I still need to ask. Can I just make a comment, General? Good morning. And I think that's where this committee will differ from you. You said we now have this contract, we need to live with it. It's clearly an illegal contract. And surely SAPS can get out of this contract. And maybe SAPS should look at getting out of this contract. From 183 million rand to over a billion rand already, and we basically don't see anything on the ground for this money that has been spent. Secondly, I do not believe that this management sitting here can tell us that this is what we inherited and unfortunately, you know, we need to live with it, as you said. Because in 2011, 2012, This management spend over 500 million on Schedule D. This management, no other management, this management on Schedule D. You could have taken a decision before then. I don't know what you spent in this financial year. So there's no such thing as saying, well, we've got this contract. If it's an illegal contract, you can get out of the contract. And if it's, and I think it seriously should be investigated. Secondly, was there other bidders? Were there other bidders? And again, like with the Tesla issue. If there were, can we get the names? And can we get the prices at which they came in? So what worries me is that it was set according to the table that implementation at laboratories was meant to be completed 2011-12. It's now clear it's not. In 2012-2013, 150 police stations were supposed to have this system. It was supposed to be rolled out to 150 police stations. It's clear it's not. Your 2012-2013 performance plan, annual performance plan, which you presented to us not very long ago, when you were sitting here for a week, relates again, reiterates, that the target for 2012-2013 is the rollout of PKM at 150 police stations. Are we back in a situation like e-dockets, where we talk about it but we don't have it? Is what I'm asking you is PKM behind schedule? Even on this little bit that they were supposed to be rolling out. And if it is, were there penalties built in into the contract? Why is it, and you haven't answered that question when you responded, why is it that the courts have suddenly disappeared from this? Because the original plan also included some court involvement as well. I would presume is the movement from the sub-13 to the court or from the laboratory to the court when the court case is happening. Why is it that that has now disappeared? You know what, when you mentioned the consortium, it became obvious to me why Schedule D is there. Very, very obvious. Because some of those, I won't mention names, of those companies that you have there are the people that have been providing cleaning services, are the people that have been providing all kinds of services and which we had problems with tenders and processes before. I cannot see some of those people becoming part of a contract that would only have paid out 183 million rand. I can see them becoming part of a contract that is going to pay out closer to a billion rand, or has already paid out closer to a billion rand. The issue of training. You mentioned that in the end, you're looking at about 20,000 end users in SAPS. That's a full rollout program. Up to date, there were 1,394 registered PKM users. We've been told that some users at the forensic laboratories have been trained. However, we are not told how many and what the cost thereof was. The contract states, and this I found quite amazing as well, as the Honourable Kula Barnard would say, bizarre. The contract states that such may require Unisys to recommend or develop a training program for such personnel. You either put it in the contract or you don't put it in the contract. And the cost will be on a quotation basis. So again, an open-ended contract. Open-ended. You decide quotation, let's ignore bid, let's ignore everything else, quotation basis, open-ended. In the action plan on IANS ICT services submitted to the committee in the replies dated 26th of April 2012, Schedule C of that, training was noted as an inhibiting factor. Training was noted in those replies as an inhibiting factor. Then I think it's very important that we note that 200 new users in 2011-12 apparently was trained at the cost of 7.52 million rand, which is an average cost of 37,000 rand per user. Now, if you look at the fact that you are talking about 20,000 users in the end, and we presume they must all be trained, then we are looking at a further 752 million rand just for training on the system. 752,500. 752,500,000. I do not know whether the department can respond to the questions we are raising and whether we shouldn't ask. Where you can respond, that you respond, but that we shouldn't just ask, instead of frustrating all of us, including the department, I believe, that a serious relook at this contract be conducted. Not only a serious relook, a proper investigation into what has happened here. I find it extremely interesting that the original system, your licenses have been increased tremendously, I think from 400 to, I can't remember the exact figure, at no extra cost. And that's why I asked that question in the beginning. Was it not possible to further extend this property, the EMS system? You say no. And you say it's based on YAFA, but then you tell us, this one is based on that, and then you contradict yourself, etc. But we're also told that no study was done. National Commissioner, the problem and the frustration of this committee is we have seen this with buildings of police stations. We have seen this with Tetra. We are seeing it with Peking. We see it in so many areas in this environment, but we do not see consequences. We have sat here over and over and over and again and said, criminally charge the people who are responsible for this. Some of them, instead of charging them, not some of them, there are a couple of them, which is Section 35. We further reward them. One of them was as old as I am. Well, as I was at the time that she left with a Section 35. For 15 years still, the department is going to pay her pension as if she is retiring at the age of 60. 45 at the stage when she took that, when she was offered Section 35. Why are these people not criminally charged? Why is it that we charge some people but we don't charge others? Here we're talking about a billion rand basically down the drain because we've got nothing to show for it. We don't have the 150 police stations. We don't have it at the FSL. If we don't have it and we've already spent R1 billion and we still need to roll it out to 1,120 police stations, can you imagine what the cost will be then? General, I'm going to give you, General Nkumbani, General Mfumi, I'm going to give you opportunity to answer if there's some of these questions that members have raised that you want to answer and you believe you can answer. But I think, and I would ask members to bear with me as well, we're not going to solve this issue today. This issue requires of SAPS going back, applying their minds and coming back to us and saying, we've stopped the contract, we are looking at illegal dealings that have took place or not place, or we have looked at the contract, we have changed the contract, we are satisfied with the contract, we're going ahead with it. But it is clear that management have a problem with the contract as it is as well. And I think we need to acknowledge that part of it as well. General Mfumi, over to you if there's still some things that you want to respond.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. It's only two questions that I want to explain. In terms of our presentation, the question about whether we know how much was spent, let me put it this way, the question as to how much we paid the company, this specific company, is in terms of the slides that I presented. You remember that on slide number 35, where we said this is the total cost, and then going back 29 to 34 indicates if we were to add those monies where we said for a statement of works 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, that amount would come to 183 million. And then the slides that follow are the slides that indicate how much we have paid out of Schedule D, which means that it is the additional money that went to this specific company. What we did not put here is what we did not know. For example, what the Honorable Chairperson indicated with regard to the vehicles that we are not aware of, we'll investigate that. But everything that we know that has been paid to this company, the orders that we have issued and what we have not yet paid them, we have made it visible here. I wanted to clarify on that. And then the question which is a right question to ask is whether are we all brand new here? The truth of the matter is that no, we are not all brand new. We have, let me talk from the Bid Adjudication Committee perspective, we have received submissions for the procurement of items towards the development of the PCAM, which we have approved. However, as it went on and on, we began to ask questions to say, but this also is a part of PCAM, this also is a part of PCAM, and we have got submissions that were not approved and were sent back, as well as a letter which was submitted to CISA. I can make a copy of that letter available, signed by the then acting national commissioner, in which he was requesting to say we would like to review this Schedule D. So I'm trying to indicate that it's, you know, not answers that we are developing here. And and we have stopped. We have, you may check our Bid Adjudication Committee minutes of the meeting, where we have indicated that henceforth the committee will not approve any submissions that quotations are to be procured out of Schedule D, Honorable Chairperson. And then Brigadier Ngake will also explain in terms of where do the monies come from for the 183 million, as well as the other money that we are using to buy out of Schedule D.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. The 183 million is IJS, rings specifically for PCAM, and the expenditure in terms of the contracted deliverables for PCAM version 1X is on schedule. There's no outstanding payments, there's no outstanding deliverables in terms of 1X, so everything is going well. In terms of Schedule due planning, we are doing CJS 3-year planning, as mandated in the CJS 7-point plan to capacitate certain divisions, forensics being one of those divisions, and then the money that was used to procure items from Schedule D is part of that CJS planning. In terms of why no specs for EUE?
Sorry, Brigadier, I'm sorry. I'm trying to be extremely patient, but you flaunting Treasury regulations, and you're doing it in such a way that it's business as normal. You're telling us we're using ring-fence IJS money to buy Schedule D products. And then you just continue. I'm really trying to be patient, but I mean, when SAS members are so in your face about flaunting regulations, then I have a serious problem with it. The speed at which you talk is not going to make us miss the fact that you've just said we're paying the 750 million out of this. You are not on track, Brigadier. You're not on track. Tell me where's the 150 police stations? You've got one pilot project in Brooklyn and or Cullinan. I mean, I've got different answers to that one as well. Where are the 150 police stations? Can we get off here now, get into our vehicles and go to one of those stations?
Okay, just a matter of clarification, Madam Chair. What's contracted at the value of 183 million these services to develop 1X, and we did specify in the contract that if subs would require additional services as per our bid, then subs would set up the contract in that regard to engage with the service provider to cater for such services. And the implementation of PKM at the station level, we're talking now PKM version 1.1, is an additional service that is not contracted in 183 million. The 183 million is only for 1X, Madam Chair.
Problem comes in, because in your plan, that rollout is part of it.
What are you expecting, Jefferson?
Different, but I mean, the fact of the matter is this project does not cost 193 million. Doesn't cost 193 million. You've been misleading this committee over a long period of time. Over a long period of time on what the actual cost of PKM is. And I'm asking you, I'm requesting you not to continue to do so. I'm also requesting you not to treat Schedule D and the payment of Schedule G out of ring-fence funds as being okay, because it's not okay.
There seems to be a conflation between what ring-fence funds are, and that they seem to believe that if it's ring-fence funding, no tenders need to be called. It can just be dished out. I mean, it's just quite bizarre.
There we go. The irony of it is that we all know that the ring-fence funds is actually supposed to speak to the whole of the IJS, of the criminal justice, CJS, of the criminal justice system. It's got to benefit the whole of the criminal justice system. Now we're buying disposables with ring-fence funds. That's not what it was intended for. It was never intended for disposable funds. For disposable products. You know it and I know it. Treasury certainly knows it. And if Treasury is not aware of it, currently this committee will definitely make them aware of it. Do you believe you should continue trying to answer that question? I honestly think in order to stop unnecessary embarrassment, we should stop this meeting. With the outstanding questions that are there.
Agreed, Chairperson.
Where the department can provide General Mufumi those outstanding issues in writing, please do so. I still don't know the 150 stations. We want to know about the 150 stations. We want to know not only where we are with them, we want to know which 150 is going to be done in 9 months' time, end of the financial year, in 9 months' time, so that we can actually go and look. No, 12:30. The FSL was supposed to be done. So, can we get that aspect of it, please? I'm going to give the National Commissioner an opportunity to make closing remarks, and then I'm going to summarize so that we can end this meeting.
Chairperson. This has been the most sobering experience of my induction. I'm totally sobered up by the engagements we've had here, but I still am thankful, because I think it would have taken me many, many, many months to understand the extent of challenges that are facing us. It is clear that we're dealing here as a department with very significant investments, significant, in a true sense of the word. The expectations, not only from our oversight stakeholders like yourself, but also from the citizens, is that these very precious resources that are being put in our hands are being put in the hands of men and women who are understanding first the importance and urgency of what needs to be done. Secondly, the speed with which we can not continue to postpone the benefits and the delivery of those services and goods to our citizens. Thirdly, the risk at which we put our government by not being up to it, because when we see service delivery protests that we're seeing out there, we would be a contributor towards this. I have no proxy at this point in time, but I'm taking that proxy to apologize for my team and to say we shall go back and engage as a family and actually ensure that our eye is on a common goal. We get refreshed commitment from each of us in terms of what is it that needs to be done, when shall we do it, by what time, and we need to come back to you. I also would like to say, perhaps what is a sparkle of hope is the fact that the minister himself, in his budget speech, has actually indicated that he's concerned about this area and has already asked the SIU to look into some of these matters. Though there was a limited scope in terms of maybe they had identified one or two or three things, I actually am leaving here saying to you I'm going to consult the stakeholders so that we broaden that scope and understand precisely what is happening in our total SCM environment. We require a very urgent audit of that environment so that, you know, we've smelled part of the coffee, I think we need the full aroma. And then we can sit down, go back on the drawing board,
and look at remedies that are necessary to assist us to do what we're supposed to be doing. I think I've listened to a number of advice that came out of here. We need to deal with many issues: standard operational procedures, issues of managing conflict, issues of just rolling out our programs on time, issues of contract management. It's very clear that we are having a deflated balloon. We need to buy a new balloon and inflate it afresh, and we shall come back to come and present that to you. In the 100 days report, we may not be completed, but I'll be able to give a significant progress in terms of the plans, how they are, and exactly what time we shall come back to give feedback. And I think we'll be looking at two approaches. There's an immediate one. I think we need to come back on these two projects to come and give feedback. That would be, almost one of the quicker feedback issues that we'll bring back. But broadly, we'll come back on our broader SCM re-engineering and share with you how we're re-engineering the platform. And I've heard you loud and clear to say those type of processes cannot, they have as an unavoidable neighbor, consequence management. We will also talk about that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, General Pleha. I'm going to ask SAPS management just to excuse and Sito and whoever else is here that's not part of the committee, that does not include the committee secretary and the committee researchers, just to leave the committee for 5 minutes, please. We will call you back.